Epilogue. Lopin patted the rocks fondly.
"I will never forget you," he said to them, "or the time we shared together."
Rushu tucked away her notepad, apparently having finished her final sketch of the broken city. They were doing one last round of the place, some hours after the battle.
"It was a brave thing you did," Lopin said to the rocks. "Though I know you are only rocks and cannot listen to me, because you are dead, or really were never alive, you must hear that I appreciate your sacrifice."
"Could you be less weird, maybe?" Rushu asked. "For a day, at least, to try it out? Experience the world the way the rest of us do?"
"You saw what these rocks did."
"I saw one of the monsters trip," Rushu said, "if that's what you mean."
They'd made it all the way to the city ruins, Lopin on Huyo's back, before the monsters had caught up to them. He remembered huddling in one of the fallen buildings. Rushu had scouted a location for them that had a roof, waiting for the end to come. And then one of the monsters had stumbled. Of course, sure, 5 minutes later the things had all turned around and returned to the ocean. Lopin hadn't known it at the time, but this was because Brightness Rissen had negotiated peace. Still, that time the monster had tripped on the rocks had bought at least 10 seconds.
"Didn't your cousin literally save your life?" Rushu said, joining Lopin as they walked to the beach.
"Yeah, he did," Lopin said.
Thanking Huyo was going to be harder than thanking a bunch of rocks, so Lopin had wanted to practice. At the beach, Kistled waited with 2 rowboats to take them to the Wander Sail. They'd somehow transitioned from near death to leaving with a ridiculous haul. Shard plate, a mountain of gemstones, real this time, and some soul casters?
"Remind me never to cross Brightness Rissen," Lopin said. "I don't know what those challenges are she passed, but I can't believe it ended with us so rich. And so, well, alive."
"Yes, I agree," Rushu said. "There is something strange about all this, isn't there?"
She tapped her pen against her lips, then shook her head and walked down to climb into a boat. They were leaving for Thalina. They'd been offered the chance to stay, now that the mysterious trials were done, but nobody wanted to hang around. Why tempt fate? At the beach, Lopin nodded to Kistled, who got into the boat with Rushu, leaving Lopin and Huyo alone in the other one. Huyo seemed surprised by this, but Lopin had arranged it. He settled into the seat and began rowing. Wasn't too difficult, so long as you had 2 arms.
"Can't believe we're getting away," Huyo said, watching the island retreat. "What do you suppose happened in that cavern underneath?"
"None of our business, I think," Lopin said.
Huyo grunted.
"Wise words, younger cousin, sure, wise words."
They sat quietly for a time, Lopin navigating the boat toward the Wander Sail.
"So,"
Lopin finally said,
"third ideal, eh? Congratulations, older cousin."
"Thanks. That's the ideal where you agree to protect people you hate. At least it was for Kaladin, Teft, and Sig."
"Yeah," Huyo said. "And you looked right at me," Lopin said softly, "before you achieved it."
"Doesn't have to mean what you think," Huyo said. "You heard Teft tell us about his oath. For him, it meant coming to realize he couldn't keep hating himself."
"Was it the same for you, then?"
Lopin asked, slowly pulling the oars. 1 stroke after another. When Huyo didn't respond, he continued more softly,
"It's okay, Huyo. I can hear it. I need to."
"I don't hate you, Lopin," Huyo said. "Who could hate you? It would take a special kind of bitter soul." "That statement, like the Lopin himself, sounds like it comes with a quite spectacular bot attached."
Huyo smiled, then leaned forward. He was so often solemn, Lopin's older cousin. Built like a boulder and kind of resembling one, with that balding head, everyone misunderstood Huyo. Maybe even the Lopin himself.
"I don't hate you," Huyo said. "But you can be a pain, younger cousin. Me, Punyo, Fleeta, even Mama Land. The way you joke can sometimes hurt us."
"I joke with the people I love. That's how I am."
"Yes, but does it have to be?" Huyo asked. "Could you, sure, tease a little less?"
"I..."
Storms. Was it true? Was that how they thought of him? Lopin pasted a smile on and nodded to Huyo, who seemed relieved that the conversation had gone so well. They reached the ship, and Rua hovered about Lopin's head as he laughed with the sailors he met. But he slowly made his way to the small cabin he shared with Huyo. For now, Huyo gave him space to go in, sit down, and stare.
"Do others complain about me?" Lopin asked Rua, who settled onto the table. "Do my jokes actually hurt people?"
The little spren shrugged, then nodded. Sometimes they did.
"Stormfather," Lopin whispered. "I just want people to be happy. That's what I try to do. Make them smile."
Rua nodded again, solemn. Lopin felt a sudden sharp pain in his breast, accompanied by shame spren sprinkling around him like red flower petals. It threatened to spread, to encompass him. It made him want to curl up and never say another word. Maybe they'd like that. A quiet Lopin.
"Storm it," he thought. "No. No, I gotta take this like Bridge 4. Arrow straight to the heart. But I can pull it out and heal."
Huyo could have held the truth back, laughed everything off. But he'd trusted Lopin with this wound.
"I'll do it, then," Lopin said, standing up. "I've got to protect people, you know. Even from myself. Gotta rededicate to being the best Lopin possible. A better, improved, extra-incredible Lopin."
Rua lifted his hand into the air in a fist. Then the little spren toppled over to the side.
"Rua," Lopin said, leaning down. "You playing a trick on me, Nocco?"
Rua vanished. Then a silvery little dagger appeared in his place. "What on Roshar?" Lopin picked it up. It was physical, not insubstantial. It was,
"These words are accepted."
A burst of frost and power exploded around Lopin.
"Storm me!"
Lopin shouted, looking at the ceiling.
"You did it again? I almost died out there, and you accept the words now?"
"It is the right time."
"Where's the drama?"
Lopin demanded at the sky.
"The sense of timing. You're terrible at this, Penhito."
"I take offense at that. Be glad for what you have."
"I didn't even know I'd said it," Lopin muttered. "Storm it, stupid oath."
But he tried out the dagger, and it changed to a nice silvery sword, beautiful and ornate. He'd expected a little engraving of Rua making a rude gesture, and of course, as he thought about it, that exact thing appeared on the blade. Huh. This offered a ton of possibilities. No, no. He would be better. No pranks. Or, well, fewer pranks. He could do that. Protect people from himself? Who'd ever heard of an oath like that? But, well, he was the Lopin. Things should be different for him.
"Hey, Huyo!"
he shouted, yanking open the door.
"You're never gonna guess what just happened!"
Rissin didn't let herself relax until the winds finally stopped blowing and calm sunlight streamed in through the porthole of her cabin. The ship was free of the storm around Akina. They'd actually been allowed to leave. Not that she was alone. A few hordlings accompanied her in secret, representatives of the Sleepless, who would train with her and keep watch over her, likely for the rest of her life. But the arrangement had been made, the details hammered out. The lie was the best kind, as it required very little actual lying. Almost all of what they had to say was true, and of the crew, only Rissen and Cord knew the full secret. Chiri-Chiri chirped nearby from a set of towels she'd arranged into a nest. She looked so content now, full of color. She'd spent the ride bouncing around and prancing through the room, then flying near the ceiling, as full of energy as Rissen had ever seen her. Would Chiri-Chiri retain the ability to fly as she grew big as a chasm fiend? Nickley had implied she would. Storm winds. How would Rissen deal with that? How long would it take? Well, she'd handle it when the time came. She was less confident about the other burden, the one in her mind. She'd spent this entire voyage wondering if she belonged here, in this seat. And now she'd entered territory no Babsk could ever have trained her to traverse. But she'd certainly had lots of practice sitting up straight these last years. And in a way, she found that she felt comforted. If no one had traveled this path before, then she didn't have to compare herself to anyone, did she? She didn't have to be Vestim, not in this task. "Is that why you chose me?" Rissen asked Chiri-Chiri. "Did you know I could bear this?" The Larkin chirped encouragingly, and it was incredible how much better that made her feel. Rissen used her arms to scoot her body along the bench and poured some tea. At last, she felt relaxed enough to read through the responses from the monarchs, mostly confirmations of what she'd sent. They would want to speak to her in person to get the details. There she would confide in them the second half-lie, that she had agreed to train the Sleepless. Storms. Was it her, or did this tea taste extra good? She inspected it, then glanced at the sunlight pouring through the porthole. Was it brighter than usual? Why did the colors in her room look so exceptionally vivid all of a sudden? A knock came at her door. "Come in," she said, taking another sip of the wonderful tea. Captain Durlwan entered, then bowed. Outside, Cord continued her vigil of guarding Rissen's door, wearing full shard plate. "You're really going to let her keep it?" Durlwan said softly as she came up from her bow. "Cord discovered it," Rissen said. "It's traditional to let the one who first claims a shard keep it." The command pulsed with warmth as she said that. "Besides, Cord saved my life." "The Alethi won't be happy," Durlwan said. "They have a history of laying dubious but strongly enforced claim to shards."
"They'll deal with the pain of losing this one," Rissen said. "They're getting 3 soul casters, after all."
Durlwan smiled at that. 5 of the new soul casters would go to Thelena. For years, the Alethi had possessed a near monopoly on food-creating soul casters, but Thelena would now possess 2, along with one that could form metals, one that created smoke, and another focused on wood, matching the one that the city had used for ages to make the best seafaring lumber. A true wealth that would benefit Thelena for generations. And with the gemstones found in the caverns, the crew would have their promised riches in compensation for the danger they'd undertaken. She still mourned the 3 men she'd lost. It seemed such a waste of their lives when an agreement had been reached so soon after. She wondered if generals ever grieved for the last people who died before a treaty was signed.
Captain Durwan settled down in the seat beside the desk. She didn't speak for a long moment, instead looking past Rissen at the sunlight streaming in through the porthole.
"I didn't think we'd see the sun again," Durwan finally said. "Not once those things arrived. Even after you returned, I expected them to make some beast sink the Wandersail as it was leaving, then blame it on the storm."
"I'll admit," Rissen said, "those same fears occurred to me."
"What are they, Rissen?" the captain asked. "Truly, they seem like monsters of nightmare and the void."
"Most people who are different from us are frightening at first," Rissen said. "But one thing Vestim taught me was to see past my own expectations. In this case, it meant looking past what I assumed made someone a person, and seeing the humanity and the fear in what appeared to be a nightmare."
"They told me," the captain said, "what you did."
Rissen felt a spike of alarm, cup held halfway to her lips. "What? They talked about the Dawn Shard after all this?"
"As the ones on the ship were leaving," Durwan said, "before you returned, they told me you had a chance to bargain for your own life. They said you would not enter into a negotiation unless it included the safety of the entire crew."
"Ah, that part." Rissen's anxiety faded. "I did what any Rebsk would do."
"Pardon," the captain said. "But you did what any good Rebsk would do. A Rebsk worthy of this crew."
They shared a look, then Rissen nodded her thanks.
"After we leave port on our third journey," Durwan said, standing, "it would be good for the crew to see you steer the ship for a short time, would it not?"
"I would be honored," Rissen said, her voice catching as she said it. "Truly," Durwan smiled.
"Let us hope the next one is a more traditional voyage."
Rissen's eyes flicked to a purple hoardling hiding on the wall, near where it met the ceiling, shadowed. Strange how she saw the contrast of shadows much more starkly now. And why did Durwan's voice sound more musical?
"I think," Rissen said, "I shall select the most boring, most mundane trade expedition I can find, Captain."
That satisfied Durwan. Rissen settled back, a single glory spren fading overhead, and thought upon those words. Mundane. Boring. She had an inkling that neither would ever accurately describe her life again.